This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. $1 trillion and growing. That's how much Americans owe in outstanding student loans. The heavy debt burden is a drag on the economy and tough on young people starting out in life. And as of today, that burden is about to get even heavier for many current and future students.
That's because interest rates on federal loans are doubling from 3.2% to 6.8%. Both parties in Congress say they oppose the increase, but they're so deadlocked that they can't agree either on a temporary or permanent fix. The result? More than 7 million low-income students will have to pay the much higher rate on federally subsidized Stafford loans.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. Are you a student struggling to pay off your loans? Are you a new college student about to apply for a federal loan? How do you feel about higher interest rates? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston.
And first, we're going to start off with a bit of background on how we got to this point. We're joined by Kelly Field. She's a senior reporter at the Chronicle of Higher Education, where she covers policy issues. And Kelly Field, welcome to Radio Boston. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So this interest rate deadline didn't exactly sneak up on anyone. Remind us about some of the background here that led to this impasse in Congress. How do we get here?
Sure. Well, it all goes back to 2006, when Democrats took back the House of Representatives. They included in their platform a plan to halve the interest rates on student loans. It was part of the 6 for 06. And basically, it reduced the interest rate from 6.8 to 3.4% over 5 years. That was set to expire last year, but because it was an election year, nobody wanted to let it happen and alienate student voters. So they pushed it off for a year, and here we are again a year later facing this deadline again.
So they kicked the can down the road, and now we're here at the can, and there were various proposals floating around Congress. The Republican-led House passed a plan that was never considered by the Senate. What would that plan have done? What did the Republicans want to do?
Sure. Well, the Republicans wanted to peg student loan interest rates to the market. So right now, Congress sets interest rates, and it's a very political process. And often, as a result, the rates don't really reflect what's going on in the broader markets. So the idea was to tie them to the 10-year T-note so that the rate that students were getting on their student loans would be more in line with what other consumers were getting on consumer debt.
Oh, I see. But Democrats had a problem with that and wanted to do something else, right?
Well, you know, pretty much everyone agrees we should move to a market-based rate, but the question is how we do that and what sort of consumer protections are included. President Obama actually endorsed a market-based rate as well, but he included in his plan an expansion of income-based repayment, which he said would help protect borrowers from, you know, especially low-income borrowers if rates rose. Some of the Democrats want to go further and have a cap that would ensure that when interest rates get really high, borrowers wouldn't have to face the really high interest rates.
Well, back on June 6th, we had Senator Elizabeth Warren on the show, and she talked about her plan to reduce interest rates to the same rates charged to big banks. Here's what she said.
Every time the government makes a low interest loan, it invests in the borrower. So as a country, if we're going to sit around and invest in these large financial institutions, I think we ought to at least give that good a deal to our students who are trying to get an education.
And that good deal would have been 1 year at an incredibly low interest rate at something like 0.75%. What happened to that proposal? Did that go anywhere?
No, I mean, that's really a political non-starter. That would cost the government a lot of money because, you know, when students default on their loans, the taxpayers have to cover the costs. So there's really no way that we would ever see an interest rate that low. But there are a lot of people saying that we do need to have rates that are more in line with what's going on in the market, particularly right now when rates are so low. That's why people are so concerned about students suddenly paying 6.8%.
So, Kelly, finally, is there any chance that Congress is going to take this up I mean, they're about to adjourn for the 4th of July holiday. Where does this leave us?
Yeah, I mean, they've already left for their home district, so we're not going to see anything happen today. I mean, it's already taken effect today. The good news is that there is some wiggle room. Most students actually don't sign for their loans until August or September. So they could go back in the month of July and do something retroactively and fix the rates so students actually don't face the rates. unclear if they'll actually do that. I mean, they're not under the same sort of political pressure that they were last year in the midst of an election season. But we do still have, you know, a number of student groups and, you know, Elizabeth Warren's petition, I think, got thousands of signatures on MoveOn.org. We have a lot of people are paying attention to this, and they're going to be hearing from their constituents when they go back home.
Well, listeners, we want to hear from you. We're talking about the doubling of federal student loan rates from 3.2% to 6.8%. That takes effect today. I'm talking to Kelly Field. She's a senior reporter at the Chronicle of Higher Education. And let me introduce Bob Giannino Racine. He's CEO of You Aspire, which is a Boston-based nonprofit that provides counseling about college financial aid to high school students around the country. And Bob, welcome to Radio Boston. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So what's the effect of this impasse, essentially, from where you sit? You give a lot of advice to people about how to deal with college loans. How many students does it affect? How serious is this in your view?
Well, this has the potential to affect all moderate and low-income young people who apply for student loans. So we're talking about millions of students.
Millions, yeah.
That will be affected by this. And I think it impacts them in a couple of ways. One is the media coverage related to this rate increase, I think, has the potential to turn young people away from what they already perceive as a very costly undertaking of paying for college. At the same time, you have young people that have already enrolled, already made a series of decisions about where they're going to be. These are students that might be sophomores or juniors in college or seniors in college now, who've already made a set of choices about what they perceive as what they're willing to pay. And now they're having the rules of the game changed partway through.
Mm. So we hear a lot about very heavy student debt across the country. And I was looking up some numbers from the Project on Student Debt at the Institute for College Access and Success. Average student debt across the country, $26,600. I guess it's a little higher here in Massachusetts, closer to $27,000. So what does this do to that average debt load?
Well, what this does is that it means that they will, over the lifetime of their repayment, take that up fairly significantly and lengthen out the amount of time that it will take to repay that loan. And then the secondary repercussions of that is that they will take longer to enjoy the benefits of that education from an economic perspective. So they will put off things like starting a family, buying a home, putting money aside for their own children's college savings or for their own retirement, all things that will have major impacts on our macroeconomic environment.
So, Bob, what in your view would be the correct fix here? I mean, what should Congress do? What would you like to see Congress do?
I think that, something that is more market-based, that is closer to what the current interest rates are out there, I think that we have an environment that 3.4% has been working in for quite some time, and that strikes me as sort of a fair range to be working in. And it strikes me as hard to imagine that we're willing to charge low-income, moderate-income families and young people to pay back their loans more than we're willing to lend that money to banks, and not something that is very American in my mind.
Kelly Field, I want to come back to you and just ask you the same question that I asked Bob a moment ago. And just the question is just around how big an increase is this to the average student out there when we're talking about doubling this interest rate?
Sure. And, one thing that he mentioned was that this could scare all the media coverage of this could scare off some students. And I think that there's been some inaccurate coverage out there that probably is having a detrimental effect on people. I mean, President Obama said at one point that this would be a $1,000 tax hike on students. And a lot of news outlets interpreted that as meaning that students would be paying $1,000 more a year in interest on their student debt. And, there have been some reports that from some very reliable sources that suggest that it's more in line with about $2,600 over the life of a 10-year loan, which, is not pocket change, but that's not $1,000 a year. It's actually, more like $25 a month for most borrowers with the average amount of debt.
the average amount of debt, about $25, $26 a month, you said, something like that.
$24, $25.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. Are you a student struggling to pay off your loans? Are you a new college student about to apply for a federal loan? How do you feel about these higher interest rates? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Jennifer, who's calling from Beverly. Hi, Jennifer. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
So I just wanted to call and add a different perspective because I'm 41 years old. I'm a social worker, and I have $99,000 in student loans. That includes my undergrad and my graduate loans, which I consolidated after I graduated from graduate school because I wasn't able to pay the two loan payments by themselves, so it gave me a smaller loan amount to pay each month. But by doing that, I forfeited my right to ever get a, refinance the loan again. And so I cannot get a lower interest rate. So my interest rate is, I actually said the wrong one when I called and talked to your producer, but my interest rate is 8.125.
Mm-hmm.
So
8.125%. So that's high.
Yes, very high. And at the time, that was low. That was like a good rate to have. So I'm in a situation where I feel I will never, ever get out from under my student loans. I'm looking at my statement right now, and it says that my principal balance is $99,482.79. I have actually paid $66,000 towards that loan.
Jennifer, we got it. And I wanted to put this question to Bob because he's sitting here nodding his head, listening to your story. And Bob, what do you hear in Jennifer's story? And this sort of leads to a question about how to plan around these issues, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry to say that the experience that Jennifer has is one that we hear a lot about and that we too often see students running down the path towards. I'd say, you know, we have $30 billion of student loan debt that's held by people over 60 years old in this country. This is, unfortunately, the future that Jennifer sees is one that is playing itself out with millions and millions of recent college grads. And I think what we need to make sure happens is something that's not happening today, which is ensuring that high school graduates that are about to make their college decisions get really good counseling about the decision that they're about to make. Fidelity released a report recently that showed that 40% of recent college graduates would have made a different decision about how they financed their education and, in fact, what school they chose to go to had somebody explained to them what that choice was going to mean in the long run. Mm.
Well, Bob, I want to talk to you in a moment about what sort of constitutes good counseling and what and the kinds of questions that families and prospective students should ask. But first, we've got Congressman John Tierney on the line. He represents Massachusetts' 6th Congressional District, and he sits on the House Committee on Education and the Workforce. And Congressman, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. Good to be there.
So, impasse there in Washington. You're all taking off on your July 4th break, and student loan rates are doubling. What has to happen here? Because we hear a lot about this heavy debt burden, and the job's not getting done in Washington.
Most of us are going back to our districts to work, and we'll be talking to people that have issues and problems like this. But what has to happen is, first, that 7.4 million people with the subsidized Stafford loans, that has to be the first thing of business when we get back. We have to convince somehow the Republicans that this is serious business. Hopefully they're listening to it when they go home, and we can keep that rate at least at 3.4% while we try to reauthorize the entire higher education bill and deal with all the various kinds of loans. And in the bill that I filed, and it has a counterpart in the Senate as well, we would also let people that have already graduated write down to a lower rate. Mm. And I think that's what needs to be done. We need to stop treating the students that take out these loans as a profit center. Make sure that the loans do pay for themselves. It, obviously, there's going to have to be a payback that covers the cost of the principal, that covers the cost of administration, and that has a factor in it for some default. But if we do that, that would still be a markedly lower rate And if we let everybody then write down to that rate, it would put some $14 to $17 billion back into the economy as people save hundreds of dollars a month. And if they're at that point of their life where they're going to be spending that money.
But Congressman, is the impasse in Washington, is it over this cap? I mean, it seems like the Republicans want to, you both agree, both parties agree more or less, tie them to market rates. But it seems like the Democrats...
Well, I don't think that's true. I mean, I think to tie them to market rates is partially an answer. And of course, my bill and Jack Reed in the Senate, we use the 90-day Treasury note because that's a low rate that allows us to pay it back. What's really at the crux here is two different philosophies. The Republican philosophy, as stated by John Klein and others that he chairs the committee, is that we should be acting as a business, that this is market-driven, that we ought to get as high a rate as any bank would get from these students, even if it means we're making money off them. And we made $51 billion last year. My position, Elizabeth Warren's position, other people similarly situated say, no, that's not what this is. This is about access and affordability. This is about making sure that students can get an education without being indebted for the rest of their lives, that we have it cover the cost, but not make a profit on them. And that's the difference here. You've got one group of people who think that, well, we need to keep making money to pay down the deficit that they incidentally ran up with Iraq, with the tax breaks in 2001, 2003, with all these other things. They want to mask that debt by earning more than they should from the students and using that to play down on the deficit. They apparently don't want the students to have a deficit to carry forward, but they don't mind them having this heavy, heavy student loan to carry forward.
Well, Congressman, final question. I'll let you go. But, you know, clearly describe it any way you want, two different political views, two different ideas on how to handle this, but clearly the impasse continued to such a point that you couldn't get it done before July 4th. Are you confident that maybe you can get it done when you guys return?
I'm confident, you know, it's the same price as despair, so I'm confident on that because I think that they're going to hear it when they go home from people, like you're hearing it today, that are going to tell them to go back and start being reasonable, to not refile a bill that would have been more than doubling it, but to go back and at least take care of the short-term problem and then get down to business of dealing with the long-term problem. You know, people really should take out direct loans, and they should really look seriously at the income-based repayment plan. So if we get the interest rates down, we have the income-based repayment plan in effect, it'll make things a lot better for students. And then particularly if we allow the people that already have the loans that have graduated to write back down, I think that's a large piece of it.
All right. Congressman John Tierney, he represents Massachusetts' 6th Congressional District. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Andy. Take care.
Bob, Janino Racine, a couple of things that the congressman was talking about. Income-based repayment plan. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's an option that students can select when they start to borrow that indexes their ability to pay back their student loans based on what they're making upon graduation. So it really protects young people who may have difficulty entering the job market, but also who may decide to do public service jobs and jobs that won't have as big of an immediate return or salary upon graduation.
Let's try to get one more call into this segment. Chris is calling from Somerville. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi there. Great to be here. A quick comment, which Representative Tierney brought up as well, is I want to get back to Elizabeth Warren's proposal, which is such a good proposal to get the student loan interest rate to the same low rate that businesses get. And the reporter from the Chronicle of Education said that it was a non-starter because the government would lose so much money on defaulted loans. And I don't understand that. It doesn't make any sense to me. The loan program is a big moneymaker for the government. Why is the fear of the government losing money going to stop this proposal from going forward?
Well, let me bring Kelly Field back into this conversation. And Kelly, can you respond to Chris?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's making money at the current interest rates. But if you brought it down to that level that she's proposing, which is less than a percentage point, then it would not be making money for the government any longer.
I see. And Kelly, you said political non-starter. That wasn't your opinion. It's just the way it's been received in Washington, right? I mean, it created a lot of buzz around Elizabeth Warren's proposal, but it didn't go anywhere in Washington in any realistic way.
Right. Right. Exactly. I mean, there were a lot of petitions and a lot of rallies held outside banks and congressional offices, but it was never really anything that was under serious consideration. Mm.
But Chris, thanks so much for the call. Bob, I want to come back to you because before we had the congressman on the air, you were talking about the need for good counseling. That's what your business does. What are the sort of fundamental one or two things that families need to think about when they start thinking about loans?
Well, they certainly need to compare all the financial aid offers that they've received from the many schools and do an analysis of what the short-term and long-term ramifications of those decisions mean about how much they're going to borrow. And then they really do need to make a balanced decision. The process of selecting a school is a very emotional one. Students get very caught up in wanting to go to the school of their choice. And unfortunately, we see so many students and then their families supporting them to make a decision that even though that might be their dream to go to a certain school, their dream will mean that they're going to be hampered by debt for the rest of their lives, as Jennifer experienced earlier in the call. So. Mm.
And Kelly, you know, I want to ask you finally, you cover the politics of this. You do a great job doing it. We heard Congressman Tierney sort of giving a full-throated sort of explanation of the Democratic position, what has to happen. But he's going to go back to Washington. He's going to be faced with the other side. Do you think they're going to get something done on this? What does your gut tell you about this?
I think there's a decent chance that they won't, and that the rates will double. I mean, even some student groups are starting to say we'd rather have the 6.8% than some of these proposals for a long-term fix. Because, you know, even though they would be better in the short term, if you're looking years out, you could actually be facing higher interest rates, particularly if you don't have a cap. So I think some of the groups have somewhat resigned themselves to that happening. You know, the reauthorization of the Higher Ed Act, which governs all the student aid programs, is up next year. And the Democrats have been calling for a one-year extension of the current rate so that they can figure this all out in the context of reauthorization. So it's possible they'll either do that, although that would cost billions and they have to come up with the money for that, or that they'll just let this happen for a year and then come back next year and come up with a longer-term fix.
All right.
So we can take the politics out of the process.
Well, we'll have to see what happens. And thank you very much, Kelly Field, senior reporter at the Chronicle of Higher Education. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Bob Giannino Racine, he's CEO of USpire, a Boston-based nonprofit that helps high school students around the country better understand the financial aid process. Bob, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Pleasure to be here.
And thanks as well to Congressman John Tierney, who we heard from earlier in the break. And listeners, stay with us. This conversation continues. You can post your comments at radioboston.org. Coming up, the New England Aquarium gets a multi-million dollar redo. We'll go there for a visit. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.
Well, we're going to actually turn, Anthony, right now to a little bit about the weather, because the National Weather Service has issued two new tornado warnings for central Essex County and northeastern Middlesex County. Those warnings are scheduled to last until 4:15 p.m. Residents in those areas are being told to take shelter. Joining us now with more is meteorologist Mark Rosenthal. Mark, what are you seeing? What's going into the fact that the Weather Service has decided to issue these warnings?
Well, yes, exactly. As a matter of fact, we do have a tornado warning now until 4:15 for northeastern Middlesex County of northeastern Massachusetts, central portions of northeastern Massachusetts, including the Andover, Gloucester, Peabody area, once you get up towards the Cranes Beach area and towards southeast New Hampshire, until 4:15. As a matter of fact, at 3:30, Doppler radar indicated a severe thunderstorm capable of producing a tornado. This dangerous storm was located near Billerica, or about 7 miles south of Lowell, and moving into the northeast at 25 miles an hour. Now, we're looking at Doppler radar, and Doppler radar shows an intense line of storms from northeastern Worcester County into Lowell and Lawrence, moving into southeastern New Hampshire, moving off to the northeast at about 20 to 30 miles an hour. Looks like the worst part of the storm right now is moving into the north shore of Massachusetts. Then there's a break. Then there are more showers and thunderstorms developing from Springfield to Hartford down towards Poughkeepsie. So this is going to be a long event with off and on again showers and storms. We're also under a flash flood watch until tomorrow morning. The potential is there for some dangerous flooding of streams, streets, and basements as well.
Mark Rosenthal, meteorologist for WBUR. Mark, thanks so much.
Sure, thank you.
And listeners, the Massachusetts Emergency Management Association administration is saying that if you live in those tornado warning areas, again, for central Essex County and northeastern Middlesex County, they're saying go to your basement. If you don't have a basement, go to the lowest floor, the center of the building, anywhere away from windows. Stay with WBUR for the latest on the severe weather alert. You can go to our website, WBUR.org, but also stick with us here on the air through this afternoon. There's more Radio Boston in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We'll be right back.